John McCullough in for Frank Beckman this President's Day 2007. Welcome into hour number two of our broadcast. We have a couple of cases going on in the greater Detroit area that are pretty darn interesting from a number of different aspects. One, the case of the woman who murdered her husband, Nancy Seaman, I believe is her name, and she was convicted by a jury of 12 tried and true of first-degree murder. The judge vacated that verdict and said, no, it's going to be second-degree murder. And the appeals court, looking at the evidence, which is what they do, said, wait a minute, she didn't use a weapon of convenience. She went and picked out that axe and bought it and came back and chopped her husband up with it. And so it was back to first degree. The other case involved in this hysteria that surrounds both subjects concerns a child molestation case brought against a local teacher. And it turns out that exculpatory evidence was withheld from the jury in this case. And the verdict of guilty has been questioned. And it turns out that Mr. James Perry is going to get a new trial. This kind of hysteria goes much further than this. It goes countrywide. And joining us is Ron Grignal. He is with an organization called RADAR, Respecting Accuracy in Domestic Abuse Reporting. That's the acronym for RADAR. Ron joins us now. And Ron, this kind of thing, it is really not that unusual, is it?
Well, yeah, and I'm not exactly familiar with those cases in Michigan. But, I mean, what the problem is of tilting the judicial scales. I mean, you know, we have a judicial system for a reason. You got a way to due process. You got to look at all the evidence and, you know, then decide if the person is guilty or not. And that the reason you do that is for things like false accusations. If you make it too easy to say this person is guilty and you don't, the standards of proof are low and the definitions are low, then you get what you end up getting is a lot of false accusations and then lawyers manipulating the system. And that, in the area that I am familiar with, which is domestic violence, that's what's going on. The standards of what is the definition of domestic violence have been reduced. The definition has been reduced to something that's almost meaningless. I mean, most states have this kind of what's called mental abuse, and, you know, and that's really amorphous. You don't even know what it is. It comes out, could be like, you know, the wife is mad at her husband because he's watching TV instead of doing the dishes. And then on top of that, the standards of proof are so low that all you have to do to get a protective order, which says move your partner from the house, is a 5-minute hearing in front of a magistrate, and then the one partner is removed, usually the father, from the house for 2 weeks, and not seeing the kids don't get to see him for 2 weeks, and then you basically won. If there's going to be a divorce, you've won your case then, and lawyers all know that because the judge is never going to let you back in the house. And on top of that, you know, you're going to fight an uphill battle to get to see your children. And you basically won your custody case and your divorce settlement got the house. And lawyers all know this all across the country. And these protective orders have become part of the gamesmanship of divorce. They're no longer about, you know, justice.
Excuse me for interrupting. I spoke with a couple of attorneys in preparation for today's interview. And one of them told me exactly what you just said. He said it's not a search for justice anymore in court. It's a game. And you just, if you know how to play the game, that's what it comes down to. Who knows how to play the game better? And some poor guys can't afford an attorney. They go in pro se, and they're the ones who really get raked over the coals because they don't know how to play the game at all. And so many more are going in pro se because by the time they get done with them, they have no money left to hire an attorney. And the other guy told me, he's a divorce attorney, he said, that's the first thing I do. When a woman comes to me for a divorce, when she retains me, I then send her out of the office and send her to the police station or to the court, wherever they go, to file that, get that PPO, personal protection order, because it gives her a leg up in the custody battle. And that's an automatic for him, whether or not the guy's ever touched her. Or done anything. And I think that's sick.
Oh, I've seen it worse than that. I have talked to guys who, you know, maybe some states it's slightly different, where lawyers will actually counsel their women clients. It's like, well, you know, all you have to do is go provoke an assault. You know, tell them you're having an affair or whatever. Just keep going. Keep provoking them and have them push you, and then you really have won then, because something actually did happen, you know. And so the guy that his wife comes to him and says, I've been having an affair and doing all this stuff, and he pushes her, is treated in the exact same way as a serial abuser that consistently, you know, beats his wife. And that's where we've lost something there. We don't have any balance anymore because of this law, which, I mean, who knows why it was started. It's probably a combination of good intentions on some people's part, naivety, and, you know, pushing a certain agenda, where we've kind of lost the balance. And when you lose a balance of how to evaluate false claims, then you get this bizarre situation. I mean, part of the domestic violence industry is kind of ideological driven, and they want to see, you know, make it look like there's all kinds of domestic violence out there. And so if you lower the standards and make those claims easy to get, you've achieved your goal, because right now one-third of all divorce cases in the United States involve some sort of protective order. And, you know, the statistics from every other study don't show that. I mean, abuse is probably much, in a married couple at least, is probably about 2-3% at best. It's not one-third of all divorce cases. So we got some crazy stuff going on here because of the originated with the what's called the Violence Against Women Act,
I was just going to ask you about that.
Right.
You know, where the power for this all comes from seems to be the Violence Against Women Act, which has given birth to a number of state laws, hundreds of state laws, which are really hopelessly gender skewed, aren't they?
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a couple things, you know, just on the Violence Against Women Act. $4 billion, roughly, in related programs have been spent since 1994 on that. What it's done is set up all these advocacy groups all over the states, and what do? They pressure, a big part of what they do is pressure legislators for more money for shelters, which you can argue maybe that's not a bad thing, but then they want to expand their membership, and they push on laws, and they want to crack, their goal is to crack down on domestic violence. The easiest way to do it is reduce the standards of proof, and slowly reduce the standards of proof to almost nothing, and then basically get rid of it, due process. Now, you're right. You know, there is a big gender bias there. I mean, and that's bad for two reasons. First of all, you know, the studies show that women initiate violence just as often as men do, and some women are abusers. Now, women do suffer more of the injuries, obviously, because men are bigger and so forth, and men don't report them. But think of that case where you have a woman abuser. She usually has some sort of drug or alcohol problem, some sort of psychological problem, and she's never going to get help either, because the system's telling her, oh, no, must, you know, if that woman calls about, or a man calls, it's like, oh, no, he must have been abusing you. You know, there must have been something. I mean, and here's the absurdity of it all. A lot of states, about three-quarters of states, have what's called the primary aggressor law. That means, then this is combined with mandatory arrest. Police are always supposed to arrest somebody when they're called to a situation. And that, you know, that right there, you took away the police judgment of what they're supposed to do. So, but what was happening is a lot of women were getting arrested. And then some of these groups saw that and said they introduced these primary aggressor laws. And now it's in police policy in a lot of places, passed through state laws, where when the police come to the scene, they're supposed to look at, see who could do the most damage. Not actually who initiated, not actually what happened. No, who could do the most damage here? So, I mean, that is gender, you know, then how do you do that? Well, who's bigger, who's stronger? So that's gender profiling right there. Now you have a situation where a woman can initiate the violence, and the man will get arrested when the police are called.
Now, we're talking with Ron Grignol. He's with an organization called Radar. They're in Washington, D.C. It's Respecting Accuracy in Domestic Abuse Reporting. That's their acronym, Radar. And I want to make it very clear, before we go any further with this, that I am as against domestic abuse against women as the next guy. I have actually served on committees that have studied it and increased the ways that women can enter into the system and increase the number of domestic abuse shelters for females in the city that I was in. And I'm as I said, I'm as appalled as the next guy against it. What I'm also appalled at what's going on as a result of this Violence Against Women Act, because our guest Ron Grignol called it exactly what it is, And he may have just glossed over it and not thought about it, but it is an industry, and it's a huge industry. And one of the things that it's doing, and we're going to talk about this after we take a short break, is taking away, in so many cases, the woman's rights. And we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to open up the phone lines, 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. As we continue with John McCullough in for Frank Beckman here on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to the Frank Beckman Show on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's special guest host, John McCullough.
With my special guest, Ron Grignol, with the Washington, D.C.-based organization Radar, respecting accurate reporting, accurate domestic abuse reporting. And before we took the break, I mentioned, Ron, how this has kind of backfired, this Violence Against Women Act. And the laws that it's engendered has kind of backfired on those who were pushing it, in that it takes away the rights of many women and breaks up families as a result. Can you explain how that works?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of ways that happens in just on how that harms women. One of the ways is, and you mentioned it as you're doing your lead-in, and I agree with you. I mean, true abusers, we want those guys prosecuted, but we wanted to go through the legal system to make sure the claims are there. But what's happening now is the courts are clogged with all these false cases, these trivial cases that are just for a divorce battle that, the real true victims, which is a small percentage of that, I mean, they get lost in the noise and they don't really get help because the system is dealing with all this other stuff. And the penalties, maybe aren't severe enough because then all cases are sort of treated the same, which hurts all the innocent, the majority of innocent people out there. But then it also doesn't punish enough, say, or protect enough the women who are truly abused, which there are some. So, nobody's denying that. I mean, so that's part of the thing it does. The other thing, there's a couple other things that it does too. What's called no drop prosecution. I mean, sometimes women, they were angry and called the police, or a neighbor called the police, and they don't really want this to go forward because, they just think of that case that I kind of brought up where a woman admitted she had an affair, things got out of hand, was angry, the guy pushed her, somehow the police were called, then, the woman realizes what happened. There's an attempt to reconcile. Once you get a protective order, you're never going to reconcile because you're never allowed to talk to each other. So they're not even respecting these women who go back. The law enforcement and these laws don't respect the women that go back and say, hey, this is actually what happened. It was fairly minor. It got a little out of hand, but it doesn't happen all the time. We need to drop this. So, and that's because the DV mindset is, oh, yeah, once it happens, it's going to happen forever, and all cases are exactly the same. They're all severe, even to the point of normal marital disagreements, just arguments that, are criminalized. And one of the things on these TPOs, over half of them don't even involve an allegation of abuse by the woman. In other words, it's just a threat that I think something might happen. So that's another way that women are hurt. There's also different things too. I mean, women have gotten caught up in protective orders and because the standard is now so low. The other thing is it can lull you into a false sense of security. I mean, a protective order is the penalty for a protective order is 10 days in jail in most places if you violate it. Okay, now who is that going to stop? It's kind of like the same argument for gun controls. It's going to stop innocent people who don't want the 10 days in jail. If you're a true abuser and you're intent on doing serious injury or murdering your ex, you don't care about 10 days in jail because you're risking life in prison or the death penalty.
Well, so, it doesn't stop. It's like you called it. Gun control will never take away the guns from criminals because they don't care.
Right.
And domestic abuse in PPO, if you get up against a real abuser, you can put him through 100 classes. You can jail him for 10 days all you want. He's going to do it. And the best thing to do is just lock him up, throw away the key.
Exactly. Yes, right. And so the protective orders are only hurting innocent people. people that would never do this.
Well, in some cases, if a reconciliation is attempted and the woman refuses to testify, she can be convicted of a felony, can't she?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because the assumption is once it's out there, then we got to break up the family. It's necessary to break up the family. The only solution is break up the family and have those two never see each other ever again. And like I said, there's just all kinds of cases where that just isn't the case. And also think of the case of where there might be some sort of abuse or just inappropriate behavior and there's some drug or alcohol, either on the woman or man, a drug or alcohol abuse going on. Well, what if that person gets treatment and they've been through AA or something, you know, and the couple wants to get back together? I mean, shouldn't we respect that? Isn't preserving the family, shouldn't it be part of all this? Or is the solution just break up every family that you can see? I mean, why don't we just pass a law that says men and women can't live together? That would solve all domestic violence. I mean, that's almost the road we're on. That's almost the ridiculousness of the situation. It's like we want to stop traffic deaths, so we're going to make the speed limit on all interstate highways 5 miles an hour. Well, that's really not a practical solution. But somehow we've gone down this road with these PPOs, which also is not really a practical solution.
When the feminists, and I'm talking to radical feminists, declared what could be called a gender war against men, how much of an influence did they have on the wording of the Violence Against Women Act, as well as in some of these state laws that are in effect?
Well, that you've hit the nail on the head too. I mean, there's a mixture of good intentions there, but there's also a lot of ideology in this stuff too. And you just look across all college campuses right now. There's all these women's studies programs that teach about the evil patriarchy that needs to be overthrown. You know, most people don't apply to that, but that's what's taught at those college campuses. Now, the women that take those classes, they go to HR programs all over the country. They get involved with these advocacy groups, and they're kind of believing this stuff, and they're pushing, and they're kind of conditioned to believe that you know, that's what we got to do. We got to overthrow men. We got to punish men, you know, on and on and on. Forget the family. That's not really important. That's secondary to what they want. They see it as empowerment of women, I guess, but I mean, in process, they're breaking up families because of kind of a flawed ideology. I mean, that's not how families have ever worked. You know, there's, you know, ask any man that's married today and ask him how much of a patriarchy he really has. I mean, I think he'd probably laugh at that.
Yeah, so, ask any car salesman.
Exactly.
How much of a patriarchy it is. Yeah. What's the old saying? You know, I got to go ask for my wife's permission.
Yeah, I got to go ask the boss.
Yeah.
Right.
So. And, you know, in one of our counties here, we had a caller, I think I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago on another case, and it was a cop who called. He says, well, we've got an order here in this county. When we get a domestic abuse call, we are ordered to remove the man from the house. That's it. We have to do that. And here's what happens. And he told me this story off the air. He called me. He said in one case that he was involved in, they had to remove the man. The woman was not only the abuser, she was a drug addict. And then somebody reported that. I think it may have even been the husband. He said, you want my kids in that environment. That's what the fight's about. So HR comes in, or pardon me, families and whatever it is here in the state, goes in and takes the kids out and puts them in foster care. Now you have a family completely broken up. She's not getting any treatment, and he's under threat of jail if he sees the kids.
Right. And then and the obvious solution was give the kids back to the father. And no, we have to go to, you know, the first choice is the mother, no matter how bad she is. And the second choice is the kids go to foster care. I mean, that's just the ridiculousness of it. And I'll give you another example on how ridiculous and how easy to get these protective orders are. There's a David Letterman case where there's a lady in New Mexico watching TV saying David Letterman is sending vibes to her through her television and he's sexually harassing her. She goes to the court in New Mexico and asks for a protective order for David Letterman to stop doing this. Nobody laughs her out. Nobody says to her, you need help, this is crazy. No, she's granted a protective order. And if you read the New Mexico statute, she could get one. And so then, you know, if she'd end up in New York or something, David Letterman could get arrested. Now, how is that helping anybody? And that is not that uncommon. You know, these thoughts of, oh my God, I'm afraid that my husband might do something. Well, you know, you can't just go on that. You have to have more than that. I mean, it's not based on, the legal system's not based on feelings. And you know, lawyers know how to manipulate this. You know, if you're, like I said before, you know, your husband is watching the TV when he should be doing the dishes, that is not domestic violence. That's not mental abuse. But somehow that's what we've come to, where it's that easy to get a protective order just because I want one.
If you would like to get a copy of the special report authored by the group Radar, Respecting Accuracy in Domestic Abuse Reporting, they're in Rockville, Maryland. Go to their website, mediaradar.org. Our guest, Ron Grignol, is a spokesperson for that organization. And Ron, I'm sorry, I'm flat out of time, but we'll be having you back again. I'm sure this whole issue is not something that's going to go away, but I do appreciate the time you've given us today, and I think you've given our audience something to think about.
Thanks very much for having me, John. I really appreciate it.
Okay.